Okay, good morning, friends. My name is Malay Sinha, and I, along with the Conqueror, whom you know very well, we have been associated with setting up this Garden of Samadhi Research Center in Bangalore. Welcome to this retreat on cultivating mindfulness and emotional balance. This is being organized by us in collaboration with Srishti. I think most of you are from Srishti, so we are extremely grateful to Srishti for providing this facility and cooperating with us, collaborating with us to do it. And this retreat is going to be led by, we are very fortunate that it is going to be led by Glenn Sevenson. He is originally from Australia, and he has been a practitioner as well as teacher of contemplative and meditative practices associated particularly with Buddhism for many years now, and he has done a 7-year master's program on advanced Buddhist learning on Sutra and Tantra, and since then he has been teaching all over the world. He regularly teaches at Nishika in Dharamshala. In fact, he has a very tight schedule, and we are really lucky that we convinced him to take out some time between a series of teachings that he has in India as well as abroad in Europe. Soon, I think after a couple of months, he'll be off to Europe. Now, I'm told that the Conqueror has already briefed you about the Garden of Samadhi Center. But just briefly, you know, setting up of this center in Bangalore was inspired by His Holiness Dalai Lama. You know, Dalai Lama has often been saying that most of these contemplative and meditative practices and teachings related to them traveled from India, and they went to Tibet and to many parts of the world, and they continue to travel to Europe and America. But somehow or other, India missed out to some extent because many of these practices were extinct, or they were relegated to the background. So he has always been saying that, you know, the Indians should do something about reviving it in a non-sectarian fashion so that the benefits of these practices could be enjoyed by people from different walks of life. And that was the inspiration which made us think of setting up the center. And the vision and the concept of this center was given by a very famous person. You can Google him. His name is Dr. Alan Wallace. He has set up similar centers in the US, in Thailand. He's setting up one in Italy, and then this is the fourth one. His specialty is he brings in rigorous scientific examination to these contemplative practices to see their efficacy and to see how they can be applied to people in different from different walks of life for their benefit. Well, friends, today is a very important day for all of us. Dubankar is our backbone in Bangalore. Will is here, and of course, Glenn is here, our very key supporter. It's a very important day because this is the first event of this center that we are holding. It's a small step that we have taken. The journey is long, but we are going to continue on the journey until the time as we revive these practices on scientific lines and make them available to people in India for the day. Thank you. Now I request Mr. Ram to come and say a few words on do's and don'ts, because as you can see, this is a beautiful place, but there are certain minimal do's and don'ts which we would like to share with you.
Good morning. Welcome to the School of Ancient Wisdom. Very happy to have you all here. And especially this program of the great mindfulness. It's nice that you are having me in the place of the School of Ancient Wisdom. So much to be mindful of. Yeah. We want you to help us to take care of the practices. We try to keep it as clean as possible. You do not litter the grounds. After your meal, please leave your plates and the other utensils in a cup or in cups that are provided, so that it becomes easier for helpers to clean them up. And also, do not pluck any fruits. There are some mangoes that are beginning to ripen. Do not allow people to pluck the fruits. They are left for the birds and other insects and animals that live here, squirrels and so on. And after that, when they're sufficiently ripe, we harvest and we distribute it among the staff. And if you happen to be here, you also get a share. We do not sell what the land gives us. We do not allow people to pluck them before they are ripe. And also you will be creating karma. Allow the fruit to also fulfill these karmic obligations. So help us, at least take care of the trees. You can talk to the trees, you can hug the trees, but do not in any way mutilate the trees. With inscriptions or whatever it is, of good black branches. Keep our premises clean, bathrooms and so on. If you have got muddy feet, you walk into the bathroom, wash them, so that the floors do not be dirty. Please help us as much as possible, to the extent possible. Also, not fail to talk to the trees and admire. Well, thank you very much for being with us. We came to this land, there were only four trees. Of the 95. Now we have got such a lot of things.
Thank you. So good morning, everyone, and welcome to this four-day retreat on cultivating mindfulness and emotional balance. I'd like to just first off thank Garden of Samadhi Research Center for inviting me here to lead this four-day retreat. Just a little bit about my background. As Malai said, my name's Glenn Svensson. I was born and grew up in Australia. I have a Bachelor of Science in IT, so my previous background was IT field, where I worked for about 10 years. And then I started my Buddhist training about 20 years ago and finished a seven-year study program, master's program in Buddhist philosophy in Italy in 2004. And then I went on to do some retreat for some time. And for about the last 8 or 9 years, I've been traveling around teaching, mainly based in India. I've been spending roughly about 6 months of the year in India, mainly at Tushita Meditation Center in Dharamsala, running courses and retreats there. Also, I have been teaching in the Root Institute Center in Bodh Gaya in Bihar as well. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very happy to be part of the Garden of Samadhi Research Center's inaugural event here. So maybe just to help me a little bit, just to get a feel for what level of experience or understanding you have on some of these topics, I'll just get you to raise your hand for a couple of questions. So just to give me a feel of what experience you already have, how many people sort of have some sort of meditation practice? So most of you do some sort of regular meditation. How many of you have, within that, had some understanding or have done some sort of mindfulness practice? And how many of you have some sort of any understanding of Buddhist philosophy, of Buddhism? Okay, so seems like we have sort of a basis there. I'm going to be, of course, assuming that we don't understand anything, so I'm going to really start from the beginning with a lot of these things here. So of course I'll be drawing on a lot of my Buddhist understanding, but I'll be applying it in a very sort of a non-secular way, in a way that is applicable to everyone in everyday life. So that's sort of what I'm, how I'm going to approach it. And the schedule, I think we've posted it on the door outside here, and I think they're also going to post the schedule over near the dining room. And what we'll be doing is 10 minutes before every session, the bell will be ringing. So when you hear that, you know it's time to come to the session. So please make sure that you're on time to the sessions, because often in these sessions we'll be doing meditations, and sometimes we'll actually begin the session with a meditation, a short meditation. So if you're late and we're already meditating, then you'll disturb the other people when you're coming into the hall. So please make sure you're on time. And I think also in the morning there'll be a wake-up call. Someone's going to do a wake-up call with the bell. Is that true? Yeah. So, yeah, the first session in the morning starts at 6:45. So I think 6:15, a half an hour before, there will be a bell, a wake-up call. And then again, 10 minutes before every session, you'll get a bell for the session. The morning session will be 45 minutes from 6:45 till 7:30. And that's going to be really just meditation. So I'm not going to, apart from giving a few brief instructions, there's not really going to be any teaching in those sessions, just to start the day in a very focused, meditative way. So that'll be 45 minutes till 7:30. Breakfast at 7:30. And then 9 o'clock in the morning will be the first morning session. 9 till 10:15. Then we'll have a half an hour morning tea break from 10:15 to 10:45. The second session will be 10:45 till 12. And so in this retreat, there's these two main aspects of the retreat. There's the mindfulness aspect, cultivating mindfulness, and then working on cultivating emotional balance. So we're going to be focusing on the two morning sessions, after breakfast, before lunch, on the mindfulness practice. Then after lunch, so lunch will be at 12 o'clock, then a two-hour break for lunch, and then from 2 till 3 is the first afternoon session, and again 3 to 3:30 afternoon tea break. So there's tea and coffee available over in the dining room, I think, pretty well the whole day. And then from 3:30 to 4:30 will be the second afternoon session. So those two sessions will be focusing on some aspect of cultivating emotional balance. And then at 4:30 we'll have another half an hour break, afternoon break. And then from 5 till 6, the third session, we'll go back to the mindfulness practice that we've been working on in the morning. 6 o'clock will be dinner time over there again. And then in the evening we're going to finish with a little bit of discussion, question answer, 7:30, and then a short meditation finishing about 8:15 in the evening. So that's going to be the structure for the coming days. And then on the last day in the morning, we'll be doing a little bit of a wrap-up session, a meditation before breakfast. After breakfast on the Tuesday, then we'll be doing a summary of all the things that we've covered in this retreat. And then the last session in the morning, we'll be looking at a lot of integration, how to integrate a lot of these things into our daily life. And we'll be finishing at 12 o'clock on the last day. Plenty of time to get back home on that. Is there any questions about the schedule? Everyone's okay with that? Of course, being a retreat, it's very good to really try to maintain silence as best we can. And I think the Bunker's already mentioned about mobile phone use, so please don't bring mobile phones into this hall, and try to restrict using them only after the evening session. So throughout the day, if you can really leave them switched off or at least don't use them, that would be very, very helpful. And to really maintain a sort of quiet atmosphere as much as possible, no sort of shouting and carrying on, because you're going to get distracted and you won't get so much out of this retreat. And what I'm planning to do, starting tomorrow for Sunday and Monday, what I'd like to do is to do a little bit more strict silence for half the day. So this evening, after you go to bed, then when you wake up in the morning until lunchtime, really maintain strict silence. So I think most of you are sharing a room, which means, of course, no talking to your roommate, and in the breaks and at breakfast, then really maintain that silence. And I think you'll find you'll get a lot more out of the retreat. You won't disperse your energy and you won't get agitated and so forth, and you'll get much more out of it. And actually, it's very rare in our modern society to have this opportunity to be silent. I mean, when was the last time that you spent even half a day in silence? I mean, it's not very common. So that's what we're going to do. So just for those half days, to give you a little bit of a taste what it feels like to really to be really silent, not to disperse outwards, and really just work within ourselves. So that's going to be tomorrow morning and Monday morning. We're going to drop that. And then from lunchtime onwards, then we can talk, but again, not a lot of loud talking and gossiping. And I mean, it's very helpful even during the rest of the day to really try and stay as quiet as possible, and you'll find you'll get much more out of this retreat. Now, with the sessions, we're going to be introducing some framework, a little bit of background to the practice, because it's very helpful to have a framework for practice, because if we're only meditating without any understanding of what the meditation is, what its purpose is, where it fits in the bigger picture, then our practice will make very limited progress. So we're going to spend a little bit of time giving a little bit of framework, a little bit of background, a little bit of the theory to the practice. Then, of course, we're going to be practicing quite a lot, these various meditations in this retreat. And then after each of the meditations, then there'll be a lot of opportunity for question-answer feedback. So if you have some doubts about the practice, or you're not sure, or how to deal with certain things. So there's going to be a lot of interaction. So I really like my courses and retreats to be very interactive. So hopefully we can get some feedback and questions and answers and so forth. So that's a little bit about the schedule. So before we go for a break this morning, what I'd like to do is give a little bit of an introduction into these two aspects of this retreat, the cultivating the mindfulness and cultivating the emotional balance. First off, I'd like to talk a little bit about mindfulness. Now, mindfulness, of course, is a bit of a buzzword these days. It's become very trendy and very popular. So there's a lot of modern-day traditions now in many different fields talking about mindfulness, which is a very good thing. What we need to remember, however, is in a lot of these modern-day traditions, mindfulness is defined a little bit different in how it was originally defined within the Buddhist context. Because this word mindfulness within Buddhism is a translation of the Sanskrit word smriti and the Pali word sati. And both of these words literally mean to remember, to remember. So how mindfulness is defined within the Buddhist context is exactly that, our ability to remember the object. So mindfulness is simply our ability to be able to focus on an object without forgetting it, without becoming distracted. So this is how mindfulness is originally defined in the Buddhist context. Simply our ability to hold the object, to focus on the object without distraction. Now, in a lot of modern-day traditions, mindfulness is defined as something like a non-judgmental awareness of whatever is arising in the present moment. This is how it's often presented. Nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's a very good thing to do. But again, this is not really how the word mindfulness is coming originally from the ancient Buddhist texts. Also, one problem with the way sometimes the word mindfulness is used in modern traditions, this idea of non-judgmental awareness of whatever is arising. Unfortunately, I mean, how we're really supposed to understand that well, non-judgmental means to not react, with aversion or anger or jealousy or so forth. So that non-judgmental is really talking about that. But unfortunately, when some people see that, they misunderstand that, and they think, oh, non-judgmental means accept everything. Accept everything. Meaning, have no ethical evaluation. Everything is okay. Everything is not okay. So when it says non-judgmental, it does not mean throw your ethical standards out the window because they're not right. You just have to accept everything. This is not non-judgmental. This is lunacy. This is going to create a lot of problems in your life. So non-judgmental means to don't react in a negative way. Of course, we need to evaluate every situation. And this is going to come a lot when we talk about emotional balance, is that with emotional balance, then we, instead of reacting as we normally do in situations, and often in not a very good way, we need to evaluate things wisely, compassionately, and then respond. So, therefore, when we see this idea that mindfulness is this non-judgmental awareness, it doesn't mean forget about evaluating and responding. It means don't react in a negative way. So that's one thing we need to bear in mind. So, therefore, here, when we talk about mindfulness, cultivating mindfulness, we're talking about improving our attention skills. And as we're going to see later this afternoon, we can talk about what's called attentional balance. You know, our ability to maintain focus in a very calm, clear, relaxed way. And so here, this cultivating mindfulness is really talking about developing our attention skills, our ability to attend to things. Because if we can't focus well, either due to dullness or distraction, then there's a lot of problems in our life. And we know this very well. You know, if we can't really focus very well, we're not effective at work. We often find that we get very stressed and agitated. Also, what you will find is that if we're not focused, then, and we're not very calm, clear, and focused, what you'll find, of course, is if you're very tight and tense and distracted, that really sets us up to easily get caught up in what's called mental afflictions, like anger and jealousy and craving and so forth. So without this sort of state of mind, we're more easily prone to these sort of agitated, disturbed states of mind. In fact, there's a very famous quote from a great Indian Buddhist master from the 8th century, Shantideva. Maybe some of you have heard of Shantideva. And he said, those with a distracted mind are trapped in the jaws of the mental afflictions. Meaning if we have a very agitated, distracted mind, then it's very easy to get caught up in anger and jealousy and craving and all these sort of disturbed states of mind. Also, of course, if our attention skills are not very good, then we often find we end up with a lot of health problems. A lot of health problems are now identified through these negative mental states. So you'll find that many of the modern diseases are coming from effectively this lack of mindfulness and emotional mental balance. Also, a lot of sleep problems come from this as well, agitated, disturbed mind. And what we'll find also is that if we don't have good attention skills, we actually don't enjoy the simple pleasures in life as much as we should or we could. Because often we get caught up in a lot of worry and anxiety about not getting that thing, not getting enough of it, losing it. And so we're so caught up in worrying about, am I getting enough of this or will I lose it, that we don't actually enjoy what we have in front of us. And you'll find that by developing this mindfulness, we will really, one of the benefits, simple benefits, is we will enjoy the simple pleasures in life a lot more than we do now. And also, of course, in our modern society, unfortunately, we have this epidemic of ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And of course, there are many factors that can contribute to attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And one, of course, is a lot of environmental conditions, particularly our diet, you know, particularly overload of sugar, I think, is one of the main culprits of ADHD. But from a Buddhist perspective, we're all suffering ADHD. In fact, I've got a very nice little quote here that I found. It said, "The symptoms of ADHD are especially difficult to define because it is hard to draw the line at where normal levels of inattention, hyperactivity and impulsivity end and clinically significant levels requiring intervention begin." So it seems like in our modern society it's accepted that we have a certain level of inattention, hyperactivity and impulsivity. And that's it. We just have to deal with that. It's only if we have more than that, then there's a problem. But even with that level that we have, there's problems. And certainly from a Buddhist perspective, that is treatable as well. I mean, I think in modern psychology, it's just generally accepted that's it. You know, you can't really improve much on that, maybe a little bit. But from a Buddhist perspective, we can vastly improve those levels of inattention and distraction and so forth that we have now through this mindfulness practice. In fact, we can really develop a very high level of attention skills that I think certainly in modern science and psychology is really not accepted that it's really even possible. But this is the sort of things we can achieve through this mindfulness practice. And not only are we all suffering from ADHD according to Buddhism, we're also all suffering from OCD, obsessive compulsive delusional disorder, because we all obsess about some things and then we compulsively follow our thoughts, we get caught up in our stories and we delusionally believe our stories to be true. We all do that. Again, it's only if we have above a certain level of that, that then there's clinically problems. But from a Buddhist perspective, even the level of OCD we have now is clinically significant. It's causing us a lot of problems. And so, particularly in the mindfulness and the emotional balance training, we can even overcome these levels of OCD that we have now. We can really become the masters of our mind, because now we are the slaves of our mind. What happens when we have a thought or an emotional memory come up? We latch onto it, we identify with it, we follow it, we get caught up in our stories, we often get overwhelmed by these stories. And of course, often we don't know, and if it's some negative thought, emotional memory that comes up, and we don't know how to deal with it, what do? Stuff it back down. Let's try and suppress it. And of course, suppressing these things is not dealing with them. And a lot of this suppression is responsible for a lot of physical illness that we have in the world today. Now, of course, psychology sort of also understands that suppressing these negative mental events is very harmful for us. But unfortunately, some of the modern therapies for this go to the other extreme. So the two extremes here, of course, are expressing and suppression. So because now, in our modern society, a lot of people are heavily suppressing, maybe a lot of trauma and so forth. And then to deal with that, unfortunately, some modern therapies say, let it out, you know, some anger management, let it out, shout at a wall, hit a pillow, let it out. Okay, for a short time, it relieves the tension, but from a Buddhist perspective, all we have done is we have increased our tendency to get angry. So yes, today maybe we're smashing a pillow, tomorrow maybe we're smashing someone's face. So from a Buddhist perspective, we do not need to express and let it out to overcome suppression. These are the two extremes that we're trying to avoid, and within mindfulness training and emotional balance work, we can avoid both of those extremes. We can find the middle way. And in the middle way, instead of being the slaves of our mind, we will become the masters of our mind. Because particularly with the mindfulness practice, particularly how we're going to look at it on Monday, is we're going to be working with our own mind, looking at observing our own mind. So there we'll be learning to how to become the observer or the witness of our own mind, to simply observe our own thoughts, emotions and memories as they arise and pass. Because we generally don't have that ability now. Some thought or emotion comes up, we either identify with it and follow it and get caught up in it, or if we don't like it, we try and stuff it back down. Both of those are going to lead to these very heavy problems for us. So simply with the mindfulness practice of observing our own mind, we can simply observe these mental events as they arise and pass. If we can do that, then we're not feeding them. Because every time we follow them or try and suppress them, we're feeding them. Which means the habit of them coming up will get stronger and stronger and stronger. So if you want to make your mind quiet, the one thing you don't want to do is fight with these mental afflictions. If you fight with your thoughts, emotions, and memories, all you're doing is like throwing petrol on the fire. You're just making it worse. All we need to do is simply observe. Just observe these mental events as they arise and pass, which means we're not feeding them, which means the habit of them coming up in the future will get weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. Our mind will naturally become more quiet and still. And you know from your own experience, you can't make the mind still. The more you try to make your mind still, the more agitated it becomes, the more it gets worse. So again, trying to fight with the mind, trying to force it to be still, is like throwing petrol on the fire. It simply does not work. With mindfulness practice, you don't need to fight with your mind. But of course, you don't need to become the slave of your mind and succumb to your mind. You simply become the observer or the witness, observing these mental events. And if we do that, our mind will naturally become more quiet and still. And also, if we have developed this ability to observe our mind, then if some strong mental event were to arise, we could simply be present with it. And it can't overwhelm us. These mental events can only overwhelm us if we do one of two things. We either identify with the mental event or we try to suppress it. Because actually, if you look at these mental events, what is a thought, emotional memory? It's virtually nothing. It's nothing. It has no power in itself. It can't do anything to harm us. It can only harm us if we feed it, if we identify with it, or we try to suppress it. So by even simply doing this mindfulness practice, we will really become the masters of our mind. And then on top of that, with the emotional balance, we're going to look at other ways, of course, of dealing with these mental events such as attachment and anger and jealousy and so forth. So we're going to have two-pronged approach to becoming the masters of our mind. Simply developing the mindfulness and then also dealing, working with these mental events directly as well. So within the mindfulness practice then, what we are really cultivating is our attention skills, We're cultivating the ability, we're developing a calm, clear, and focused mind. So if we can develop a calm, clear, focused mind, huge benefit. We'll be much more effective in everything we do, much more effective at work, at play, at home, much more calm, much less stress, much less mental imbalance, much better physical health benefits, much better sleep. All of these benefits come. These are a lot of direct benefits from mindfulness practice. And then certainly from a Buddhist perspective, then that is a basis for developing mental balance or emotional balance and developing insight into reality and so forth, or a lot of these other practices which we're going to be looking at a little bit in this retreat as well. So, how to cultivate this mindfulness? As with every practice has two parts. You know, often we hear people, spiritual people, speaking, and they speak to another person and say, "Oh, when do you do your practice?" And then the other person says, "Oh, I do that every morning at 6:30 for an hour or half an hour." If this is our idea of practice, we're not going to get very far. Because if we diligently meditate every morning for 30 minutes or even an hour, and then we jump off the cushion and run around like crazy, like we do, then that 30 minutes of benefit will get squashed by 14 hours of mindless running around reacting to stimulus. So practice has two parts, always. Meditation, where we internalize, and then integration, what we do for the rest of the day. So if we want any practice to progress, we need both components. So practice is 24/7 activity, or at least waking hours. From when we wake up until we go to bed, that's practice. So we're going to look at both of those aspects of practice with mindfulness and emotional balance. The meditative practice, how we internalize these practices, and then how we integrate into daily life. And if we do both of those activities, we'll effectively progress in any practice. So this is a little bit about cultivating mindfulness. Any questions about that before I talk a little bit about emotional balance? Anyone have any questions about anything I've said so far? Too early in the morning? Okay. With emotional balance, I have here one definition of emotional balance that's coming from, I think in the introduction, Alan Wallace was mentioned, who's one of the sort of key players in the Garden of Samadhi Research Center. And I did last year a 5-week teacher training program called Cultivating Emotional Balance, which he co-led this retreat with another person, Eve Ekman, I think, who I believe may be coming later this year to run a program here as well. And within that, and I'll be referring to this book in our mindfulness training called Attention Revolution from Alan Wallace. I'll be referring to this book a number of times in the coming days. But in this Cultivating Emotional Balance training, emotional balance was defined, it says here, emotional balance is achieved when one has awareness of one's own and others' emotions, emotional triggers, and emotional behaviours as they arise, and making wise choices while engaging with emotional experience. So there's a number of things here that I'd just like to highlight with emotional balance. The first is, it says, is achieved when one has awareness of one's own and others' emotions and so forth. We don't have that now because our mindfulness faculty is very poor. We're not very mindful of what's going on in our mind. We're not very mindful of what's going on with other people. We generally are stimulus reaction machines. that we're faced with some sort of stimulus based on our past habits, which often are not very good, we simply react. And often it's after we've reacted we go, oh, why did I get angry? You know, why did I do that? And so a lot of the times we react and we know it's not the right response, yet we have no way of changing it because at the time that it's coming up, we have no awareness. It's only afterwards we realise, oh, I got angry again. Why did I do that? So if we want to change that, the very first thing, you know, of course, it's good to understand that reacting with anger and so forth is harmful and have the wish to change that. But we can have the biggest wish in the world to change that. But unless we have awareness or mindfulness of it as it's arising, nothing's going to change. Because we're going to react, and every time we react, we're increasing the habit of reacting. So the first step for emotional balance is mindfulness. We need to have this awareness. We need to be aware of what things are coming up in our mind, and then we can have some chance to do something about it before we're out of control. So instead of being stimulus reaction machines based on past habits, we need to, here as it said is, we need to have this awareness of our own and others' emotions, emotional triggers and emotional behaviours as they arise. So that's the first step. And then it says, and make wise choices while engaging with emotional experience. So while engaging with emotional experience, that's the other thing we do. So remember, either we react out of bad habits, or if we don't know how to deal with that, often we flip to the other extreme. And we probably all do this from time to time, is when there are certain situations where we know it's going to be a mess, we shut down. We just shut down. We just cut from stimulus because this stimulus is so overwhelming. So what we do is we just cut, shut down, and then we sort of like a zombie, you know, we don't react, but we're not responding. So that's not a solution. So we need to respond. So these are the two extremes, is reacting and shutting down, suppressing. So here with emotional balance, like with the mindfulness, we need to make sure that we are engaging in the emotional experience. So when we are in a situation, we need to engage wisely. So now, of course, we tend to be not having this emotional balance. We tend to be this stimulus reaction machine, and we tend to be reacting out of habit. And a lot of our habits are not very good. And we tend to react with what's called in Buddhism mental afflictions. That's coming from the Sanskrit word klesha. And a mental affliction is simply defined as any sort of mental factor that causes the mind to become agitated or disturbed. So we can talk about many sorts of mental afflictions, many things that afflict our mind, you know, anger and jealousy and craving and fear, anxiety, depression, all these sorts of things are mental afflictions. Now, within Buddhism, when we talk about Buddhist psychology, you know, often we come up with a sort of a main set of mental afflictions that can be really reduced down to three core mental afflictions that all the rest come from. So if we can identify these three core mental afflictions and know what they are and how to deal with them, then a lot of the other things can be covered. And in Buddhism, these are often referred to as what's called the three poisons.
first is ignorance. And in Sanskrit, this is avidya. And in ignorance, in general, ignorance is simply a deluded state of mind that's confused about its object. Here, in the three poisons, we're really talking about a very specific type of ignorance. We're talking about an ignorance that is confused about reality. Because from a Buddhist perspective, all of our mental afflictions like anger and jealousy and craving are coming from this, are coming from not seeing reality clearly. And because we don't see reality clearly, we don't see things clearly around us, we react with these mental afflictions. And we're going to only very briefly touch on this in this retreat, because this is an immense topic, and it's really beyond the scope of this retreat. But I'll just briefly mention it a few times as we go through to understand how this comes into the picture. But what I'd like to do is more focus on the other two poisons in terms of cultivating this emotional balance. The next one is often in English called attachment, coming from Sanskrit word raga. Oh, by the way, I'll be using a few Sanskrit terms here, and probably many of you are familiar with some of these, because I think that some of these are still existent in modern-day Hindi. What we need to be careful of is some of these original Sanskrit terms within Buddhist contexts have changed in meaning over the centuries. So even though this term may still be used in modern-day Hindi, maybe the meaning is not the same as what I'm explaining. So we need to be a little bit careful of that. I won't go into defining these here because I'm going to be talking about them in detail later. And the other one is aversion, or dvesha in Sanskrit. With this aversion, this sort of pushing away, I want to really focus on a particular type of aversion that is very destructive in our modern society, and that is anger. So from a Buddhist perspective, this ignorance, not seeing reality clearly, really leads to two fundamental ways of reacting to stimulus. In that when we receive pleasant stimulus, we want, which is attachment, trying to get. And when we receive unpleasant stimulus, we push it away. This is aversion. So from the Buddhist perspective, this is coming from this misunderstanding of reality, this sort of grasping, craving, and attachment for pleasant things, pushing away or trying to avoid unpleasant things. And these, individually or collectively, lead to all the other mental afflictions such as jealousy and anxiety and so forth. So what I'd like to do in this retreat is really focus on anger and attachment, in terms of what they are and how to deal with them as part of cultivating emotional balance. So, if we go back to this definition of emotional balance, it says that we are to have awareness of these things as they arise and make wise choices while engaging with emotional experience. So instead of reacting to stimulus through these sorts of mental afflictions, which just leads more problems, we need to respond wisely
So then we can talk about how to respond wisely. Here, there are two aspects of responding wisely. The first in Sanskrit is prajna, which is wisdom, so this is where the wise response comes in. So we need to see reality clearly and we need to use our wisdom to respond. But the other aspect of response is in Sanskrit, upaya, often translated as in English as something like method. And that is really talking a lot about what is underlying our method, our means of responding. And so here, of course, we are talking really about our motivation in our activities. So within the Buddhist perspective, this aspect of response or practice often is called simply the compassion aspect. So what we're talking about here then is if we want to have emotional balance, then instead of reacting with mental afflictions, and instead of shutting down or cutting from stimulus, we need to have mindfulness, to be present with the stimulus, to evaluate things clearly, and then to respond using a compassionate motivation. So this is what we're talking about here in emotional balance, these aspects. And particularly in emotional balance, we're going to look at this compassion. But we're going to look at, within a presentation within Buddhism called the Four Immeasurables. So these are four qualities that we're trying to cultivate for emotional balance so that we respond wisely to situations. The word immeasurable here means we're trying to cultivate this quality towards everyone. Loving kindness. Simply the wish for ourselves and others to be happy. So we're trying to cultivate this quality towards everyone. Compassion. The wish for ourselves and others to be free of suffering. Empathetic joy, a rejoicing in our own and others' virtue and good fortune. What's called equanimity, having a balanced view of ourselves and others, having a sense of closeness to everyone, that we're all equal in wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. So these are four qualities that we're going to look at in this retreat, what they are and how to develop them to help us to cultivate this emotional balance so that we can wisely respond to stimulus using our wisdom and these qualities. So we're going to be looking at these qualities in some detail
what they are and how to cultivate them so that we can really take steps towards having emotional balance.
Any questions before we break for morning tea? Yeah, I was going to talk about them later, but might as well put them up that you've mentioned it now.
So loving kindness, of course, is Maitri, or in Pali, Metta. Compassion is Karuna. Empathetic joy is Mudita. Equanimity is Upeksha.
Question? The word awareness, even within Buddhism, is very popular now. Unfortunately, different translators translate different Sanskrit terms with the same English word awareness, so it becomes completely confusing. Sometimes awareness is used as a word for the mind or consciousness in general, so sometimes people use the word mind, consciousness, awareness interchangeably. Sometimes people use the word awareness within a Buddhist context to talk about a particular level of the mind. Sometimes they use the word awareness to talk about the function of the mind, to be aware. Sometimes they use the word awareness for another term that we're going to look at later, our ability to introspect, our ability to monitor our own mind, which normally is translated as introspection. Sometimes translators use the word awareness for that. So it's complete minefield. It's a complete minefield, the word awareness. So I try to really limit my use of the word awareness. And when I use it, I tend to define this is how I'm using the word awareness, because otherwise it's just confusion. Because it really is, even just within Buddhism, different translators, for whatever reason, use the word awareness to talk about different things within Buddhism, and it's completely confusing. Yeah. Right.
And then there's something called immersion.
Called?
Immersion.
Immersion. What do you mean by? Okay. Well, I'm not sure what you mean by immersion. Normally, when we, in our daily life, when we're immersed in someone,
we're immersed in this.
So when we talk about immersing ourselves in something, it means we're like attached to it. So that sort of immersion we want to get out, throw out the window. Of course we can use the word immersion to mean we are completely focused on an object without becoming distracted. So then immersion, or sometimes we use the word more absorption, would be simply that our mindfulness is very good. That we are completely present with the object in a very clear and calm way. So that is something we need to cultivate. But immersed in something, usually often when we're immersed in something, we find a lot of this present. We're just craving it. We want it. We don't want to be separated from it. That sort of immersion we need to get rid of because it's just harming us. When we sow? Mind, yeah, yeah. With the events, yeah. We're going to talk about that, but very briefly, maybe we use an example. When let's say we have a thought about the clock. So we have a thought in our mind coming up, thought about clock. When we identify with that thought, what we're engaging in is the clock. When we're the observer or the witness, what we're engaging in is the thought. Oh, there's a thought there. So the object that we're engaging in is the thought, which happens to be about the clock, but the object we're engaging in is we are aware of a thought about a clock. So thought of clock. Whereas when we identify, we're engaging in the clock. We're caught up in the clock. That's the difference. So one, we're aware, yes, there's a thought that is about the clock. That's good. The other one is when we're actually then identifying or we're engaging in the object of that thought, the clock, then we often get caught up in the mental afflictions. Detachment. Again, the word detachment, I tend not to use it. It can be used as the positive opposite of this. So, it can be used as, sometimes people use it as the positive opposite of this, but again, it can be misunderstood, that word. Because, again, for us, there seems to be two extremes. Either we or we cut. So, then, you know, when people hear about detachment, they think they have to cut from everything. They have to cut. You know, oh, I have to be detached means I don't respond. I'm just like a zombie. I just like blank. That's unhealthy. So that's how sometimes people understand the word detachment. To detach from something means to detach from the stimulus. We don't want to do that. That's pathological. So remember in the definition of emotional balance, it talks about while engaging with emotional experience. We want to be fully present and engaging with no attachment. So if you want to call that detachment, so we're detaching from attachment, but we're not detaching from the experience. That's cutting. That's the other extreme. We don't want to go there. So I don't tend to use that word because often when people, we're in this sort of dualistic mode. Either we're attached or we're cutting. They're the two extremes we're trying to overcome with emotional balance.
So you
can say non-attachment. Yeah, non-attachment's better. Because detachment seems like we have to cut, separate. We don't want to do that. That's pathological. So yes, preferable is use the word non-attachment.
Yes, especially even for even anger as opposed to fear, which is also imaginative.
Yeah, because from a Buddhist perspective, these are the two core things. And then from that, a lot of these other things like fear come out of that. So that's why these two are predominantly focused on. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Aversion is just simply this wanting to push away. That can manifest in many forms, from mild irritation to anger to road rage, hostility. I mean, all of these are different flavors of aversion. I just want to focus on one flavour of that anger, which is quite destructive and something that many people have issues with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think here how we're going to look at the word and texture within the Buddhist context is related to these two things here. Is that now equanimity is like an impartial attitude towards others. Now we have a partial attitude towards others. Yes. So equanimity, that's in fact is how it's defined, is to have this not attachment to friends and anger or aversion to people we don't like. This is non-equanimity. Equanimity is not having attachment and aversion. But it doesn't mean indifference. That's the other extreme. So the other extreme is how we often deal with attachment and aversion, we just become indifferent to everything. So we're not reacting. So we're again passive. So equanimity is not this sort of equal indifference to everyone. Equanimity is an equal sense of closeness to everyone, with no attachment and aversion. But we're going to talk about that in some detail later.
Okay, last question, then we'll break. So the question before about awareness, and we're going to look at this in the mindfulness training, there are two main tools we use in mindfulness training. The main tool, of course, is mindfulness, our ability to hold the object without becoming distracted. But then, of course, we need to monitor that. You know, we need to monitor in our training, are we still holding the object or are we becoming dull or distracted? So this monitoring in Buddhism is called, usually translated as introspection. And I think this is very similar to this idea of metacognition. Metacognition, the ability to monitor. So that's this introspection that we're going to talk about later in our training. Okay, let's break there for morning tea break. So I think quite a number of you still haven't got your rooms organised. Is someone arranging that? Okay. But is there someone who's going to give them the rooms? Okay. So then you can go and put your things in the rooms, have a tea break, and come back in half an hour, 11 o'clock. Okay? See you then.